Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Liberty Talk Radio, America's libertarian voice and independent streaming internet radio station. Available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week from our studio in Tulsa, Oklahoma to around the world. I'm your host, Joe Cristiano, and this is your antidote to popular talk radio. This broadcast is being brought to you live on Sunday evening, August 8th. It is now 7.01 p.m. Central Daylight Time in the good old USA. Folks, it's time for us to take back control of our government now before this bureaucratic, oversized, and self-serving federal government starves us of our property, our freedom, our rights, and our liberty. To do this, we must shed conventional thinking regarding our political structure. We need to be revolutionaries in thought, dissidents in action. Only after we recognize what our government is doing to our freedom and our Constitution will we start taking it back. And this program is just about that. Well, good evening, everyone. During our live broadcast, we invite you to call 646-652-4620. That's 646-652-4620. Of course, you can send us your email anytime to comments@libertytalkradio.com. That's comments@libertytalkradio.com. I also encourage you to get educated on economic issues. Go to Andy Sutton's website, Sutton, SUTTON-associates.net. In his bi-weekly newsletter, Andy discusses economic issues and how they affect you. And folks, it is getting critical that you become aware of what is going on so you can prepare yourself. You can also listen to Andy's commentary on contrariesinvestorscafe.com. Lastly, I'd also like to remind our listeners to subscribe to our reminder service by visiting our website and clicking on the subscribe icon. Well, good evening, everyone. This is our second attempt to have Don Meischhausen, as our guest. Last week, I fouled up. I scheduled him for Thursday, and we broadcast on Wednesday. He hasn't called in yet. I hope we we connect this evening. I'd like you to wait right here, okay? And in the event that he doesn't call, we're going to have someone call him just in a minute. Let me give you a little background on Don. Don is really an icon. He is exemplifies liberty in the libertarian movement here in America. He is mentioned in four books about the 60s, and probably he gets more print than anyone else, you know, who's prominent in those books, who's discussed in those books, than anyone else. He found the current libertarian movement as we know it, currently writing about libertarian strategy, tax revolts, Asian goddesses, that's the one that I like, and humor. Don subscribes to the proposition that the discovery of liberty is, in fact, a discovery of oneself, and I couldn't agree with you more. I'd like you to do... hold on. We don't have him on the pipe yet. I'm getting concerned. We're going to have someone give him a call just to make certain that we do have him on the pipe, and just in case he forgets, hold on a second. This is very embarrassing. Here it is. There we go. And we're having someone give him a call right now on my cell phone. Don also has a very colorful history. He is one of the original... it gets more ink, by the way, today than any other libertarian that is still alive. He is politically active since the Goldwater era. He used to go to Ayn Rand's lectures, civil rights camps, and anti-war demonstrations while in high school. I mean, boy, I was doing nothing. I was a numbnut in high school. I mean, this guy deserves so much praise and attention and thanks from everyone in America for saving us. Don's first claim to fame is organizing the draft card burning at the 1969 Young Americans for Freedom Convention. He found an SDS chapter at the community college in Newark, New Jersey. And I thought those were such bad people when I was young. I knew nothing back then. I joined the libertarian movement back to 1989. He also thinks philosophically when he talks about what is going on and the way we should be. He talks philosophically. He talks spiritually. He talks fundamentally, and he talks pragmatically. And he's the most fascinating person. Okay, I think we have him on the pipe. Did he forget us?
No, he's ready to call.
Okay, just have him call.
Is it
646.
Okay, call.
Here we go. Call. Okay, we have him on the pipe right now. In fact, we have him on an outgoing line, so he's going to come in an incoming line. I apologize for this. I guess he said he called in a little after 7 and didn't know it was going to be about 5 after 7.
652.
But, you know, I consider myself a freedom fighter. Compared to Don, I am a weenie fighter. I am an absolute weenie. It is amazing what this man has accomplished. He has spent 4 years in jail defending our freedom. And when you come to think of it, folks, you know, there's very few of us, and I'll raise my hand, including me, that would do that. You know, I would probably back down. I'm not sure if I'm strong enough to do that. Now, maybe my old age I would do that because I'll feel how I have less to lose or something, but I would find that extremely, extremely painful and difficult. Let's see, I have so much on him. He served almost 4 years in prison. When asked to talk about drugs in a prison drug education class, Don did his first stand-up comedy and killed his audience, and that started his comedy career. He wrote humor, libertarian strategy, fundraising ideas, songs, and poetry while he was in prison. Isn't that amazing? He was honored to have the income tax rebel, Erwin Schiff, as a friend and a fellow inmate. You know, we have people in jail who are really freedom fighters. Isn't that not amazing? And he is constantly being interviewed by the libertarian media. Did you give him the telephone number?
I'm going to give him that number. He's going to call immediately.
Okay. He should be on the pipe any second now. We're just waiting for the phone lines to light up. And, you know, I call myself a libertarian and a freedom fighter. Here he is. I mean, this gentleman is a true freedom fighter, and we should have the utmost admiration for him. Don, is that you?
Yes, I am here, and thank you for such a wonderful introduction.
Thank you. I'm glad you heard that, but I truly do. This is, you know, one problem I have, Don, I'm going to get off the subject for a second. For the past few weeks, I have been on this rampage about honesty. I mentor several people who want to be professional speakers. And the first thing I do when I hear them, I sit them down and they say, Joe, well, tell me, you know, what things do I need to do, you know, to improve my effectiveness with the audience? And, you know, in every single case, Don, I said, well, it's about time you started to be honest. And they're shocked. They are all shocked. What do you mean? I'm an honest person. I never stole anything. I said, no, who are you? You know, and they tell me, they said, now, who was that person that just spoke? Wasn't that a different person that was up there? And we have lost the ability to be truly honest with ourselves. And if we cannot be honest with ourselves, how could we possibly be accepted by anyone else? Mm-hmm. Truly, unless we're fooling them for a short period of time. And and so I only say that as a preamble to the fact that when I say that I admire what you have accomplished for everyone in the world, not only America, the world, because when we talk about freedom, we're not talking about freedom within the confines of the geographic United States. Everyone in the world, whether they live in Bangladesh, whether they live in Zimbabwe or the United States, are deserving of the exact same freedoms, and we lose that, you know? And I'm being honest with you because I really, truly feel that way. What you have done, I have done nothing. Call me Joe the Weenie Libertarian, you know?
Come on. you know, don't put yourself down. Let's get into why are people so dishonest nowadays, especially our leadership? And there's a very good reason for it, is that people have the tendency to basically tell their bosses what they want to hear.
Correct.
And if the bosses are basically living because of theft, then they're not going to be honest when they're communicating with the people under them or from the people that they're stealing from.
Great. Correct.
Okay? And who are the people that nowadays people understand are telling the truth to them and are the greatest social benefactors of our age? The comedians.
Absolutely correct. You know, my wife says, I get my news now from the Colbert Report and Stewart, you know, that comedy, John Stewart.
She says you're not alone in that. The majority of young people get their news from that, from those sources.
Right.
Yep. And in a way, that's the way that you should be, because that, you know, the King's Fool, for example, you know, it's just a long period of a tradition in which people, this is the way that not only that people could vent their anger in a socially appropriate way, but that the king could actually learn that, hey, maybe he's not really such a great guy after all.
Right, right.
So this is an important part of our tradition. As a matter of fact, this whole concept goes back all to the ancient times. I've been doing some research. The roots of our freedom of speech go back to when they were celebrating Saturnalia, which was our, you know, Christmas, winter solstice. And during this time, it was a time of tremendous joviality. People would dress up in all types of costumes. And also, the slaves and masters reversed their roles. And also, people could say whatever they want and get away with it. And this, by the way, continued even after Christianity attained its supremacy. I don't know if you've ever heard of the Lords of Misrule, but during the medieval times, until just about recently, people would put on these mock pageants inside the Catholic Church. People would dress up as abbots and priests and popes and things like that, and basically drink and gamble in the church, and basically make kind of a satire out of the Christian Mass. And I think that the reason that people did this is that basically that they felt that, you know, the people on top are not really telling the truth, and this is our way of kind of gently ribbing them and getting back, etc. So there has to be this a free exchange, and of course, I think the kindest criticism that you can do for a person is basically to joke about them.
Right.
You know, and this is a way of deflating egos in a very nice way.
Right. You know,
right?
What's particularly interesting, Don,
yeah.
is that
yeah.
when I had this conversation with these the people that I'm mentoring, do you know, very often, you know what the response is to that? And it's shocking. It says, I'm not sure if I can do that. Isn't that amazing? And these are not dishonest people. Don't get me wrong. These are not, you know, these are not people crooks or anything.
Yeah,
they are
yeah,
very, very nice people. You'd love to have them as friends. But when it comes to truly presenting themselves in a raw fashion, you know, without protecting themselves with special words and phrases and whatever, so that they paint an image of something that they're not, they say, then I'm not certain if I can do that. I hear that more often than anything else. And I find that shocking, but I understand it, I think.
Well, you see, we're fortunate nowadays is that you can take part in conversations on the Internet under an assumed name and basically say what you want.
Right.
And there's all types of outlets nowadays for people to, you know, have an assumed persona, you know. And some people do it through various type of sexual exploits, like swinging or something like that. And so people are looking for ways that in their life that they can basically express other parts of their personality that just not allowed, you know, to be expressed under their current job situation.
Right.
And what we're trying to do is to create a society where everybody, you know, has a lot more options, a lot more free to do what they want. And basically, this will make just a healthier personality and a healthier world.
Right.
And I have found in my life that that when you're doing this type of necessary, liberatory political work, it's important to do things that are fun and have some type of way of expressing not just your hostility, but your creativity as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I get involved in all types of interesting projects, and whether or not sometimes it's just going to a party and sharing ideas with people, not just people in politics, because as we know, there's a lot of social change that's happening in technology, in culture, in spirituality,
right.
In just about every type of endeavor that you can name. And it's catching on. And so you can, you know, and the same types of changes are happening. All types of hierarchies are being overturned and being questioned.
Right.
But it's being done in, let's say, a nonviolent and a smart way, which so therefore that gives me a certain amount of confidence. So I would ask your listeners here is to think of experiences that they've had in which they've had good conversations with people in which this type of consciousness happened to them or the others around them, and that they were just more aware of options that, you know, of things to do, of places, you know, of ways of expressing themselves, etc. So, you know, I mean, the salon, for example, was very important in advancing a type of radical consciousness during the 17th century, and which you got people who were the top and, you know, in their various fields, and you got them together, and you had a party, and you talked about, well, what's going on in your field, this, and he says, oh, really, something like that's happening in mine, et cetera, and people cross-fertilize ideas. And, you know, of course, we just have this tremendous tool with the web, you know, in doing all of this. I don't know how many of your listeners are aware of this, but the Protestant Reformation, as well as the American Revolution, were made not only possible, but inevitable by the invention of the printing press.
That's correct.
And
that's
what the invention of the web, Facebook, all the internet media, is basically doing the same thing all over again in terms of its size and its magnitude, and this is going to be happening all over the world, as
right.
People all over the world get on the net, and people now, the language barriers and the cultural barriers are just dropping like flies. As you know, there are people in foreign lands who know American culture better than we do.
Right. Well, let me just break for station identification, because it's already a quarter past the hour. It's about 17 minutes past the hour, folks. This you're listening to Liberty Talk Radio. I'm your host, Joe Cristiano. We are pleased today to have as our guest Don, and I know how to pronounce your name, but every time I try it, I say it differently. So please correct
me. It's Meinshausen, call me Don.
Okay, Don Meinshausen. I've been saying Meinshausen. You know, I've been pronouncing it all different ways.
Yeah.
He's one of the founders of the libertarian movement. He's been involved in more things than we can shake a stick at. And if you listen in for a few minutes, you'll understand what I'm saying. So please join us. Call in with your questions or your comments, 646-652-4620. That's 646-652-4620. Of course, your emails are always welcome to comments@libertytalkradio.com. Now, Don, you know, I think it's a real waste of time, and it's a real shame. It's that when we talk about libertarian principles, that we align them or compare them with the Republican and Democrat Party, and I say, We're in the wrong ballpark. It's like saying, let's play football and everyone brings, you know, a tennis racket with them.
We're
not talking the same thing. And it's such a disjointed conversation because they're saying, well, didn't Bush say that? You want to get away from that and ask them questions like, you know, do you in fact believe in liberty for the individual? You want to ask basic questions and elicit a response from them. And then when they say yes, but you say, well, I would prefer you just gave me an answer and not the qualification. It's either yes, but if it's yes, but it's no. You know, and go on from there and really have this type of dialogue so people would start thinking. My problem, and I complain about this to my wife all the time. She's so tired of hearing this. I said, when we go somewhere, people do not converse. You sit there. Now, they may say, did you see Dancing with the Stars last night? Wasn't that, you know, and I'm sitting there, who cares? You know, there's so many important things that we should be talking about. And I know if I open my mouth, of course, my wife is looking at me. I'm getting, you know, the wife glare, you know. And
right,
I said, I know if I open my mouth, people are going to say, well, what do you want to talk about that for? That's an ugly subject. Who cares? You know, and so you keep your mouth shut. And I count the minutes, you know, when am I going to leave this place? But am I alone here? Am I the only numbnut that can't find people to truly converse with?
Well, the thing is I've noticed that if you just talk about politics, that can make you, let's just say people think you're one-sided.
That's correct.
And one should be able to converse about a number of subjects, and you know, without bringing up politics. And of course, humor is a way of bringing up politics if you want.
Absolutely right.
But what I do is when people do bring up the issue of politics, is that I point out that I've never heard of a government in history, local, state, or federal, any country in the world, or any political leader that I thought was either honest, competent, or humane. And that it's the only ones that you can find to have a degree of goodness is that when their role is basically circumscribed by a constitution or other limitations.
Right.
For example, things like the New England town meeting, et cetera.
Right.
And you look at the great people of history, the inventors, the writers, the painters, et cetera. Their dealings with government has usually been very bad. They had faced censorship, bureaucracy, taxes, wars, things like that.
Right.
And, so it's just basically it's us versus, those creative people. And what has happened is that a lot of people have learned to steer away from all of this as a basic survival skill.
Okay.
That because if you do question the system too much, that can get you into various types of problems, especially in a small town. So there's that type of situation as well. And also when you talk to people about social change, I think it's important to have a degree of imagination. I've been reading science fiction, speculative fiction, utopian fiction for a very long time. I started reading Ayn Rand when I was about 15, for example. And in order to get what you want, you have to have a vision of what you're looking for so you don't get sidetracked, because words like democracy, socialism, and all of that can easily be switched around. We've seen what's happened to the words like, liberalism and conservatism. They've been turned around into basically meaning they're opposites.
Right.
So you have to have a real understanding about, in a sense, what type of ideas produce what types of societies. And, that's part of it as well. And in terms of the study of science fiction, the only thing in science fiction that's being written that has an ideological bent to it are basically libertarian and anarchist green types of books.
Right.
So, it's that people now, have an understanding, at least the beginning of some of these issues. And you also have to realize that just because you hate one particular ideology, that the opposite of that is necessarily going to be your friend, because we saw, for example, during the Second World War, Nazis and communists fighting each other, or communists, Stalinists versus Trotskyites, and basically the choice between the two was no choice at all.
That's right.
So that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But we are seeing some amazing things that have been happening since our generation. That's all, in a sense, you look, for example, from the beginning in 1947 with Gandhi, won independence for India through nonviolence. You saw Marcos being overthrown by nonviolence, and then you saw the wonderful events of 1989, where all the Eastern European countries, and then South Africa, and then the Soviet Union, all basically collapsed pretty much nonviolently.
Right.
And they're now, all these countries, they're much more stable, much more free than they were, 20, 30 years ago. Now, of course, all these countries still haven't quite gotten there yet, but they're heading in the right direction. Mm. And that's, that's the important thing.
Yeah.
And so it's basically, keeping on with a conversation of people who understand something about the issues, and even though they're not with you all the way, they can, let's say, understand, like, yes, we have to repeal some of the government taxes and regulation. Yes, we have to legalize marijuana. Yes, these wars in the Mideast have gone on long enough. So we make our alliance with people on the left and people on the right on these single issues and just trying to proceed from there.
Yeah, I guess my problem is here in the United States, we have lost this ability to talk about any subject. And believe me, I don't want to sit down and ever talk politics, because politics says, well, if you thought Johnson was bad, what about Nixon? You know, and you get into that type of thing. And I have absolutely zero interest into that. But I'm talking about, I don't think they want to talk about religion, any current event, you know, or if they want to talk philosophy, or if they want to talk spiritual, I want to throw my body in the ring. I love to hear people's opinions on that. At least in the state of Oklahoma, we don't get that at all.
Yeah.
We don't get that. And this is what discourages me as to where we are going. We have all these venues and means of communication, and we're using them to chatter about garbage, and there's no meaningful conversation going on. This is my concern, is that we're not getting any smarter. We're just spending more time chatting about garbage. I'm sorry, I'm just so negative about it.
You know, it depends on the chat rooms that you go on. And I'm not saying that the political chat rooms are good and the other ones are bad by any stretch of the imagination. You know, I have my Facebook feed, and I make jokes here and there, and people will throw up an interesting video to comment about or something like that, and I get more out of that than, you know, listening to the radio.
Right, I'm sure you do.
Or TV.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
But here's my problem. Yeah,
it's just...
Herein
lies
my problem. A friend of my oldest son, who's a musician, he just came back from the Netherlands area. And he had a tour in that area, and he came back, and we went to a bowl game here in Tulsa. We have a AA team, and we just went. I don't follow the team, but it's a nice night out. You know, we went. This is the end of last year, the end of the season. And I said, well, Jay, how did you know? I just asked him, how did you like it there? He said, Mr. C, they call me Mr. C. Mr. C, it was fascinating. He said, I would be playing a gig, and when I was finished, I would sit down. They'd be, of course, and this is a good-looking kid. I mean, he's older now. They're like 40 years old, but they still look young. They got long hair and stuff like that, you know. And, you know, the typical musicians. And nicest kid in the world, really nice. And he said, I would sit down. He says, the girls would be there. They want to talk to me. And they would talk religion, politics, current events, philosophy. And he said, I'd never heard this before. There was none of this, you know, chatter, garbage, you know, girly stuff. They wanted to talk seriously, every one of them. And he says, it was fast. He said, I threw myself into this. And he says, I thoroughly enjoyed it. And he said, when I came back, I was incredibly disappointed in the way, in how we discussed. And I said, you're parroting me exactly. This is my point.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, yeah. Of course, people have learned through ways of, let's say, expressing humor and displeasure with things sometimes in convoluted ways. You know, and of course, one has to be able to pick up on some of that as well. You know, and as you know, people in small towns tend to be sometimes a little bit more, you know, circumspect and all that. So nowadays, people will go on the phone or. And now, of course, they're getting on the internet, and you know, and you're getting their chat rooms, and they talk about this and that. But I always tell people, you know, when they complain about petty things, I say you're only as big as the things that concern you.
That's right. Good point. You know.
And I look for things that are fairly universal, but things also that I can have an impact upon one way or the other. And of course, you know, writing a story about or a poem or a song about something sometimes might be the best way of doing it, you know, of handling all of it.
Yeah.
So there's that too.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of just understanding where you're needed and doing and getting involved in somewhere that you can make an impact and doing it creatively.
Yeah. Well, Donsey, when you were in high school, you were reading Ayn Rand, and I got thrown out of high school twice, broke my mother's heart because I was such an idiot. I did everything, you know, everything I can do wrong, I did wrong. I mean, I was a quintessential jerky kid, you know? And I guess I'm still a jerky kid, but now I'm a comedian. I'm 67 years old, and I still feel like I'm 15 years old, and I'm a comedian, and I still ride my motorcycle, you know, play drugs, I do all this stuff.
Uh-huh.
You know, and I still consider myself incredibly young. It's just that I'm on Medicare. That's what that bothers
me.
But, you know, I'd like to discuss a current issue, because this one issue, and I've thought through this one issue, touches on so many aspects of everything that you and I have been talking about. Everything from the spirituality to the concept of liberty to the Constitution, you name it. And that's this issue with the concern that they're building a mosque close to Ground Zero. And of course, there's an uproar about it. And I take a very contrarian review about this thing, and I'm very interested to hear what your input is on that, because that's a current event, and I'm sure a lot of philosophical facts will come forth as you discuss that. I think.
Well, I saw something on my Facebook feed, and I'm still trying to see whether somebody was joking or just actually this had happened or not. But it seems that some Americans want to build a youth center very close to the four blocks away from the Hiroshima blast. And people are saying this is outrageous that Americans are basically, you know, after they've done such a horrible thing to our city, think that they can build a youth center right there. And so I commented about the wonderful irony of that type of protest. It's, you know, you can talk to people and you say, well, all right, they can't do it four blocks away. Can they do it five or six? All right. Can they do it in New York City? And then if they can't do it anywhere, then what does the First Amendment mean?
Right. Exactly.
You know, exactly. You know, and a lot of people don't forget that right after 9/11 happened, there were innumerable religious authorities of Islam who condemned this as a complete abomination,
right,
including those who were very steadfastly against U.S. foreign policy in terms of Israel and us supporting their dictatorships. So, you know, it's that. And I'm in contact with many people who live in the Mideast. A lot of them are Muslims, and we all say, look, and person-to-person thing, we relate well, but we understand that our governments are at fault here. And I have visited Muslim countries and talked with them, had drank alcohol with them, sometimes smoked pot with them, and whatever, and there was no problem.
Right.
And I was just told recently by a guy who used to work for Al-Arabiya. He says things are changing very quickly here as well.
Right. And probably the more we keep our distance and just be nice guys, the faster the change will occur.
I mean, so it's just this, you've seen this thing before. I mean, you remember the movie Gangs of New York?
Yes. Sure.
Okay. New people come into the area. They're changing the area. They're
right.
Different religions, different races,
right,
et cetera. They get involved in crime because other doors are closed to them. And so they're wondering whether or not, you know, are they going to stay here? Are they going to move back,
right,
et cetera? Are they going to change to fit the culture? And so they're going through all of this, all of this identification problems right now. But they understand that they have more freedom here. They understand they
right.
have more opportunity
right.
here. It's just a matter that the question is that they don't want to lose their identity.
That's right. That's a very good point. That's a very, very good point.
Yeah. Yep. Right. And, being a Catholic or a Jew in a Protestant country can be upsetting.
That's right.
And you have to basically figure out, how are you going to relate to all of this? But our first war was, as war against the Barbary pirates. And when we finally declared a truce with them after some little adventurism in the Mideast, we sat down and we talked to them and said, please understand that the United States is not a Christian country. And John Adams said that. Barlow, who organized, wrote the treaty, said that. You can, if they said, if you guys want to come here and build a mosque, you can.
Right.
And when they understood that, you know, relationships changed between the Mideast and us. I mean, in 1956, we had excellent relations with the Arabs because we did not join Britain and France and Israel when they basically went against Egypt in trying to take over the Suez Canal.
Right.
So we've had, you know, we've had differences of opinion here back and forth, you know, with Arab nations about certain things. And, of course, this whole oil situation puts a completely different color on everything because it's a question of who controls the oil and all that.
Right. Don, I need to take a little station break here. Just one second, please.
Go ahead.
Folks, this, you're listening to Liberty Talk Radio. I'm your host, Joe Cristiano. With us this evening, we have as a guest a libertarian legend, Don Meinhausen. And we're talking just about the libertarian movement, about the philosophy, about how we should be thinking in the state of affairs. We encourage you to call 646-652-4620 with your questions or comments or whatever you want to do. This is open mic night. Consider it that. Don, you know, I heard, I think it was one of the neocon radio stations that I was listening to when I was in the car, and I don't listen to all the time. I change around just for a change of pace, just to see what this, to hear what they're saying, and I get disgusted. But he said, look at the New York Times. The New York Times has a picture of a woman who is married, a Muslim woman, whose husband chopped off her nose and her ears because she disrespected him somehow. And he says, these are the people who are building the mosque. And I thought to myself, you know, there are radical Christians, I'm sure, out there who will go out and kill someone just for the hell of it. I mean, because they don't believe. And then there are Christians who are just very, very contemporary and sort of believe everything goes, you know, type thing. And so I said, we have hundreds of sects of Christianity, and so do they. So are there dozens of sects of Islam. So the people who are cutting off the nose and the ears of their wives because they may have looked at them the wrong way is not the Muslims that live in my neighborhood, wives you would never guess they were Muslims in the first place. They've been real nice people. So really missed the point. By the way, we have a couple of calls. Can we take a couple of calls now, Don?
Whatever you want.
Okay, here we go. Bingo, come on. Caller, you're on the air. Area code 918-697. Your question, your first name and your where you're calling from, please.
Hello, this is Patricia, and I am from Tulsa. And my comment has to do with why do so many Christians in this country react so
defensively,
much as though they are personally. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, we can hear you. Go ahead.
That they take personal affront to any mention of not doing things in the Christian way, if you will. For example, when many meetings take place, there almost always is an invocation. It's always a Christian invocation.
Mm-hmm.
Rarely is it generic to just a higher power of some sort. And if any discussion is taken up regarding that, you know, whoever brought that up is just simply ostracized. It's really odd. But I wondered about your comment on that.
Well, why are you living in Tulsa? You're living in the buckle on the Bible Belt.
Bible Belt, that's right.
You need to move to San Francisco, sweetheart.
I mean, it's I think that basically, you know, every type of people should have their own space. And, you know, I mean, I know that there are pagans and Muslims and Jews living just, you know, about all over the country and all that. And, you know, when if I'm go to a political event and some people, let's say, want to do a flag salute or a prayer or something like that, I just basically step out of the room or just, you know, remain quiet, you know, and go in the back or something until they've finished doing it. I mean, in order to accomplish liberty, you have to work with a very broad range of people, and you'll find people of all different faiths, including no religious faith, within the libertarian movement. And I'm really glad about that, by the way, that we have pagans, atheists, and born-againers working together and all of that. And, you know, basically everything that's Christian, you know, whether you're talking about Christmas or sermons or church buildings or anything, all of those things have pagan roots anyway.
Right.
Go back thousands of years and all. And, you know, but I don't usually bring it up because I don't want to make them feel defensive or uncomfortable, you know, unless I want to make them defensive or uncomfortable.
Right.
You know, that's
May I ask one other question?
Sure, go ahead.
One question. What basis would you feel might be the very best upon which to appeal to others who are not of the libertarian mindset? In other words, what in the libertarian philosophy is the most likely thing to appeal to other people that may be of traditional politics?
Well, that's a very good question. I'm glad you asked it. Usually, libertarians, they talk about the practicality of things. In terms of, you know, like if we got rid of this monopoly or this subsidy or this war or this, you know, or whatever, this law, things would be a lot easier. You know, and people do that. But I find that libertarians, as they understand all of this and they understand the principle of liberty, there's a quote, you know, the non-aggression principle. And then you can say that this is, you know, we have this one axiom that we live, that, you know, we base our philosophy on. It's very, very simple. You don't have to memorize a whole bunch of stuff, and we just consistently apply this. And a lot of people, in a sense, the people who are interested in very on philosophy and are cause-oriented understand that, and they grasp a hold of that. I use both approaches, and by the way, you can also use conservative arguments for conservative people. I've known conservatives, for example, who've spoken very well against the war on drugs and against invading other countries, you know, like an American conservative magazine, for example. And in terms of left, there's a tremendous left critique of Obama, as well as there was of Johnson and FDR and Woodrow Wilson. And you'll find those from that type of critique from the left, as well as there was this big critique of communism from people who were formerly involved in the communist movement. And in term, but of course, you know, you're going to be running into more conservatives, so I would suggest that you refer them to the Mises Institute and LRC and the American Conservative Magazine, as well as Reason, and say that this is, you know, these are the people that I respect as authorities. They get their facts right, and you can tell them that there's a lot of more popular conservatives like Glenn Beck, who basically say, yeah, Ron Paul is right, and a lot of libertarian stuff is right. You know, even people like Ann Coulter are coming over. Yeah. We're not sure if we really want her to come over, but, you know, that's just the way it is.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
Does that help?
Thank you.
Yeah. Patricia,
absolutely.
Thank you so much.
Thank you
for,
very much.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for calling.
My one last little quick question is, in one sentence, would you please state what I should say to people when I want to express the libertarian cause? And I'll take that answer off the air.
Patricia, I feel your pain. Thank you very much for calling in. Okay, bye-bye.
Yeah.
Bye.
We believe with Jefferson that the government that governs best governs least.
That's simple enough, right?
Yeah, that just says it right there.
Okay, we have another call. I'm sorry.
Just go from there.
Yep, here we have another caller.
Sure thing.
Hello, caller. Area code 918-298. Exchange your first name, please.
This is Jim from Bixby, Oklahoma.
Jim from Bixby, thank you for calling in. And your question or comment, please.
All right. Don, I'm real glad you're taking time to join Joe on his broadcast this evening. There's a lot of current issues that it would be fun to get your take on. But you have a very interesting and colorful past, from what I understand. And
yes.
I was wondering if you could maybe just share with me and the listeners a story about either, you know, you're hanging out with Timothy Leary or Abby Hoffman, what your experience was like at Woodstock. I'd like to go back in time. I'll be 52 this month, so I was a little young during all of the 60 revolution, but would love to hear a story or two about your encounters with those notable people or Woodstock or anything else just to amuse us.
Okay. Well, according to the book Radicals for Capitalism, the most dramatic incident of our libertarian movement's rebirth happened in 1969. There was a Young Americans for Freedom convention, and Young Americans for Freedom is a conservative cadre organization. And what I had done within that organization is that I had developed a libertarian and an anarchist caucus, and YAF symbol was a torch, and what I did was I introduced a resolution for YAF to support draft resistance. Now, I introduced this knowing that this resolution was not going to get adopted because, basically, they've been psyching us with, you know, fighting against the new left, and, of course, they were all dependent on these rich old people giving them lots of money. But I introduced the resolution, and YAF's symbol was a torch, and when that resolution finally went down, I arranged for a friend of mine to burn his draft card, thereby conflating the two images of the torch of liberty and the burning draft card. That incited a lot of...
Don, are you there? Don, we lost you, Don. Uh-oh. I think somehow we lost the signal or we lost his line. Don, are you there? Jim, are you there?
I'm here.
All right. Don sort of went bye-bye, and... let's see. Don, if you can hear us, we can't hear you. So would you please call back? Jim, I'm awfully sorry about that.
That's right. I'm gonna hang up because it does no good for me to stay on the line.
Well, it's okay for you to stay on the line if you'd like.
I'll stay tuned into your broadcast, but I'll hang up the phone and hopes that you reconnect.
Okay, Jim, thank you very much for calling in. Appreciate you calling Liberty Talk Radio.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Folks, we lost the entire line one. Here it is. He's coming back again. One more time.
I don't know whether you heard the whole story.
No, you didn't. Don, let me interrupt you for a second. We lost you for about a full minute.
Oh, okay.
Your phone, for some reason, just totally disappeared. You just disappeared from our screen altogether, and then you just came back. So...
I'm going to move to another phone while I'm talking to you, just in case.
Okay.
Because that that might be part of the problem there. And I just
now Jim said that the fellow who called in said that he was hanging up, but he would continue listening in, so that if you were called back in, he would like to hear your answer.
Okay. Well, I don't tell me this. Okay, I don't know what part of my story was interrupted, but that draft card burning was regarded as the beginning of our separation
That's
from
right.
the conservative
exactly where you,
movement
we left
and
you.
As our birth from it.
Right. You left us with the draft card burning, and the I think we heard you were still on the pipe when the torch representing the torch of freedom and the burning of the draft card, all the same one. That sort of metaphor, if you will.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, since then. By the way, that same year, I was also a member of the Anarchist Caucus of SDS, and I participated in the, you know, in the walkout there when people realized these crazy Stalinist Maoists were, you know, also in the process of leading their organization into some type of path to disaster as well.
Yeah.
Since then, I've been involved in helping to legalize psychedelics, helping to legalize marijuana. I've been involved in the tax revolt, organizing anti-tax stuff since 1970, working with people who are John Birchers, and other types of, you know, just ordinary middle-class conservatives. I've been part of the Tea Party tax revolt. We have Rand Paul running for office here, U.S. Senate. And going, you know, from conferences, from Socialist Scholars Conference to American Independent Party, just trying to find people who are willing to take a consistent position for liberty and against the state.
Rand Paul, I heard him in a couple of interviews, and some of his responses really concerned me and surprised me at the same time. One that I recall, when he was asked about the war on terror, instead of saying, yes, it's an absolute waste of time, you can't have a war on a concept, if you will, you know, he said, he said, I really support the war on terror because I don't go as far as my father goes. And I thought to myself, first of all, what do you mean you don't go as far as your father goes? I have no idea what that means. And what do you mean you sort of support, supports the war? And he was really wishy-washy about all of that. And I said, he sounded more like a neocon than he did a libertarian. And I said, well, I mean, if he, being, you know, the son of Ron Paul, doesn't get it at his age, when will he get it or how will he get it? And there was a couple of other things that really concerned me that sounded very much either, you know, a straight party ticket type thing. Oh, we have a call. Looks like we have another caller in here. By the way, we only have about 5 more minutes, so we're going to get this caller in and get this caller out.
Okay.
Let's see who it is.
It's a very childish war that we have here.
Area code 404. You're on the air. Your first name and where you're calling from, please.
Good evening, Joe. This is Adam in Atlanta.
Oh, Adam from Atlanta. Adam, thank you so much for calling in. Adam, we only have a couple of more minutes, actually about 4 or 5 more minutes total before I need to start shutting things down. So I'm
going to
let you know that so I don't click and hang up on you or anything like that, okay? So
I'm going to make my comment brief and my question brief. Thanks for having Don on the show. This has been great. But for the caller that wanted to know, is there one sentence that you could offer someone to get them thinking about libertarian principles? And I think that the late, great Harry Brown had something, and let me see how you feel about it.
Right.
He used to say, he used to actually ask, would you trade in your favorite government program for the ability never to pay income taxes again?
Mm-hmm.
And most people would think about it for a brief moment and then say, wait a minute, I don't have a favorite government program. So I wanted to get your reaction to that. I'll clear the line because I know you've got just a couple of minutes, and I'll listen to your answer offline.
Okay.
Thank you so much. Thank you,
Val.
Sure. As you know, people, students and parents sacrifice enormously to send their kids to college. And as we can see, it's been declining. The value of a university degree. And what can I say? Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm sorry.
Okay. And one thing that's happened to the university system is that now people are learning so much over the internet. They don't need the bricks and ivy anymore. You can take all these online courses. You can watch the best authorities. They have lectures on YouTube. So you don't even really need that. The only thing that universities offer now are credentials. And as you know, if you want to get a job in anything involving computers, it's not the degree that gets you the job.
That is correct.
It's basically the interview that shows that you know your stuff.
That's exactly right. And you know, and that's an argument for bringing education back into the home and get it, you know, and divorcing yourself from government schooling. I pose a question to many people, to people when we talk about, you know, oh, we need to have, you know, the public schools and whatever. I said, would you have an opportunity to hire one of two people. One person is the average kid who went to the average high school in New York, in the United States. The other kid never set a foot into a high school. But what he did is he read religiously every single month one magazine from cover to cover. And I said, fill in the blank. Let's say, take National Geographic, and it doesn't have to be that one, but it has to be a meaningful magazine. But he read National Geographic from front to beginning to end. And when the parents came home, they asked him, what did you read today, and had a meaningful discussion. And he did that for 4 years. Which one would you hire? I've asked this dozens of times. Never once did anyone ever said, I would take the high school graduate.
Right, right, right.
And so what do we
say? And, of course, our current educational system was designed by Bismarck's Prussia, which was, in a sense, the foundation for Hitler's Germany.
Right, exactly. You know, and it's just a fascinating subject. Don, we have about one or two more. Let me see. We have, looking at it, we have about a minute and a half that I'd like to give to you to wrap up and maybe give a website or whatever or some impart some information to our
listeners. Right. I'm on Facebook. I also have a WordPress blog, also a blog at Free Agents, and I have essays on the tax revolt, how every single revolution in the world throughout history has always been a tax revolt, that taxpayer organizing is going to be to us what labor organizing was to the Marxists. I would tell people to get involved in the Tea Party tax revolt, legalizing marijuana and other drugs, as well as being involved in the anti-war movement. Whatever you enjoy, whatever types of people you enjoy working with and talking with. And if you live in a small town, just go on the net and join some groups and talk to people. And remember, you can learn things also from people that you disagree with.
Right.
Even
especially
if it's just learning how to present your arguments better.
Right. Don, would you accept my invitation to come back in the near future?
I would love to.
Okay.
I would love to. And you can call me on an individual basis if you just want to talk sometime.
That'll be wonderful.
Okay.
Don, thank you so much for being a fabulous guest. I really appreciate your time, and we'll be talking to you again.
Great. Thank you very much.
Wow. Wow. What a powerful individual he is. Oh, boy. This is the end of tonight's broadcast. We'd like to thank Ranch Acres Audiology for their financial support, and we'd like to thank you for listening in. You can further the cause of liberty by recommending this program to your friends and let us hear from you. Our email address is comments@libertytalkradio.com. Remember, you are either allowing your liberties to be taken away or you're striving to protect them. Unfortunately, folks, there ain't no middle ground. Folks, freedom is like riding a motorcycle. You feel free, liberated. Your life is in your own hands. But with that freedom comes responsibility and risks. The government is like training wheels. They control the ride and your every move. Ron Paul has a sign on his desk that says, don't steal, that government hates competition. With that, until next time, I'm Joe Crispiano. This is Liberty Talk Radio. Stay well, stay tuned.